trusted insiders. That's how one recent report describes the biggest threats to federal agencies. It's those people with more than just a bone to pick with the government or their particular agency. Names like Robert Hansen or Alder James or Julius and Ethel Rosenberg have been replaced by recent insiders like Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, and Aaron Alexis. And now instead of just passing off top secret documents in a park or carrying documents to an unnamed courier, insiders use thumb drives, CDs, and email. Jim Henderson is CEO of InsiderThreatDefense.com.
The WikiLeaks opened our eyes because that was such a big one. I mean, with each case or data breach, the spill has been bigger. Now with technology, what you can put on a USB stick, I think you could fit 65,000 one-page Word documents on a 2-gigabyte stick. The spy stuff has always been there, way back. Information, bottom line, whether cyber criminals want it or the insider want it, it's worth money.
And it's not just technology, but more people than ever have access to sensitive or classified information. A recent report from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence finds the number of people deemed eligible to access classified information increased by more than 232,000 in fiscal 2012. However, ODNI reports that the number of people who are actually given access to classified information declined by more than 27,000. Beth Colbert is the Deputy Director for Management at the Office of Management and Budget. She's leading an interagency effort to reform the security clearance process.
One of the things as part of this we're looking at is, do all those people actually need that access to do their job and carry out their work? So on that focus in particular, we've said, gee, it's probably time to take a step back and do a review. ODNI has actually instituted a process for agencies to go back and look at their clearances. Like many of these things, it's easy to add people over time as someone comes into a role, but you really need a systematic approach to look back and say, where are we today? What do we need going forward? So, for example, on that score, the agencies have all undertaken an effort to actually validate that everybody, employees, contractors, need that clearance. What do they need it for? How does it relate to the core work that they're doing? We do think that this will bring the number of clearances down. That is one way to actually reduce threats because people have less access to information.
Colbert says agencies are expected to complete these reviews by early summer. Another factor is the amount of data the government classifies or even puts a classification level on, like FOUO for official use only, or SBU, sensitive but unclassified. The more data agencies classify or at least make sensitive, the greater number of employees and contractors who need secret or top secret clearances. And all of that, Colbert says, creates a higher risk profile for the government. The National Archives and Records Administration's Information Security Oversight Office has been tackling this problem of overclassification since 2010. John Fitzpatrick is the director of the ISO. He says a group of experts have been working on a new rule to create a government-wide standard for labeling unclassified data, called CUI, Controlled Unclassified Information.
We are this month delivering to OMB's OIRA the draft rule for interagency coordination. And so a big step in the rulemaking process, as long and painful as that process can be, is to get it out of our expert group and into the government interagency. And I expect then, later in this year, then we'll be out in the Federal Register public review and comment phase and on to what will hopefully be a rule published in the spring of 2015. What that allows agencies then to do under the aspects of the order is to implement this rule. Now, it's important to keep in mind, control and classified information is new as a single label for information that has always been present in many pockets across government. Every agency has privacy information and financial information. There are many proprietary business or acquisition-related information.
Fitzpatrick, who spent 30 years working for the CIA, says having this standard helps establish rules for when and how information needs to be controlled. Fitzpatrick says the rules for classified data have been standardized for a long time, but for CUI, agencies almost made them up as they went along.
The federal employees are, by and large, mission-focused. They understand what it is they do that helps their agency achieve their mission, and they are looking for the guidance that lets them do that the best. When the guidance is clear, this is stuff you can share with everybody. This is stuff you have to think carefully about and share with a smaller group. The clarity of that makes it easier to do my job at the day-to-day, desk-to-desk level, that is an important thing. And you wouldn't naturally think, okay, and that leads to trust. But when I know that I've done the right thing and I know where to go when I have a question about what the right thing to do is, then the personal investment of each employee in that particular handling practice can be discovered.
Clarity, surety, and communication are not just for handling data, but they are the keys to creating a successful insider threat program. President Barack Obama issued new government-wide standards to protect classified data from insider threats in 2012. Agencies also got minimum standards they must use in standing up their own insider threat programs. Yet most public sector organizations still have a long way to go to develop their own insider threat programs. Don Capelli is the Director of Insider Risk Management for Rockwell Automation, an industrial automation and information company. She led a 2013 study on private sector insider threat programs for the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, or INSA. The study found most companies also struggled and had no formal insider threat detection programs. So INSA and the Homeland Security Department partnered to create a new website that is expected to come online later this month. Its goal is to help agencies and industry create insider threat programs. Capelli describes some of the 13 steps that came from interviews with six companies and other experts.
It starts with initiation. So first we start about, okay, you're at the ground floor, you don't have a program in place. You may have pieces. And that's the one thing that we emphasize is, even if you don't have an insider threat program, you probably have a lot of the pieces in place. It's really pulling a lot of those pieces together. So we talk about identifying stakeholders, who in the organization needs to buy in before you even start. Then we talk about doing a risk management assessment to try and determine what are your insider threat risks. A communications plan, identifying critical assets, and then we get into operations and actual insider incident response.
For Rockwell's program, Capelli says she offers real case studies of insiders who damage their company to illustrate why these programs are important. She says one case is when a researcher stole 38,000 documents and provided them to their competitor. Another case she uses is when a disgruntled employee caused a raw sewage spill of 800 liters into the local watershed. Those case studies and explanations of why insider threat programs are important and not just Big Brother tactics by companies or the government are other keys to success. Bill Harrod is a security advisor with CA Technologies public sector business.
We need to start a conversation that really goes back to sort of acceptable behavior. This is what we're going to do. Understand that we hold lots of information, and protecting your information from identity fraud is just as important as protecting the agency's mission-critical information.
Harrod compares the employee and management trust relationship to like having children, where you set rules of acceptable behavior and monitor them through both human interaction and technology. Ed Hammersley is Raytheon's Managing Director of Cyber Products. He says it's also about managing risk as the physical and logical security worlds come closer together.
It's not so much the technology as it is the need to set clear policies that can be implemented in a technological environment. You just could not do this manually anymore now, because you're talking about organizations with literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of employees scattered around the world, all connected into a single or multiple networks. And the only possible way to grasp the volume of data is to deal with it at the policy level and to automate those policies in a manner that, you know, doesn't interfere with day-to-day operations and doesn't impede privacy, but allows you to mitigate the risk and manage the data.
Hammersley says the burden is also on the company or agency to be transparent about what they're doing. A cross-functional team of human resources, IT, legal, and others must also be involved in setting the policy. OMB's Cobert says the Insider Threat Task Force is creating training to help agencies do just that.
Helping people understand what their responsibilities are, how they can carry them out appropriately. Same is true in security clearance and in the investigative process. We want people to understand why. We want them all to feel that personal ownership for not just their own activities, but the activities in the workplace, because that's the way we will collectively get to the best point.
In Washington, Jason Miller, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.